Chapter 5. Patriots? Sigh. What for? Deserter, he gasped, leaning against the wall under the scrutiny of her black eyes. I was left for dead over there. She led him through the house out to a small hut of clay and reeds, lost in the long grass of the overgrown orchard. He sank on a heap of maize straw in a corner, and sighed profoundly. No one will look for you here, she said, looking down at him. And nobody comes near us. We too have been left for dead here. He stirred uneasily on his heap of dirty straw, and the pain in his neck made him groan deliriously. I shall show Esteban someday that I am alive yet, he mumbled. He accepted her assistance in silence, and the many days of pain went by. Her appearances in the hut brought him relief, and became connected with the feverish dreams of angels which visited his couch. For Gaspar Ruse was instructed in the mysteries of his religion, and had even been taught to read and write a little by the priest of his village. He waited for her with impatience, and saw her pass out of the dark hut, and disappear in the brilliant sunshine with poignant regret. He discovered that, while he lay there feeling so very weak, he could, by closing his eyes, evoke her face with considerable distinctness. And this discovered faculty charmed the long, solitary hours of his convalescence. Later on, when he began to regain his strength, he would creep at dusk from his hut to the house, and sit on the step of the garden door. In one of the rooms the mad father paced to and fro, muttering to himself with short, abrupt laughs. In the passage, sitting on a stool, the mother sighed and moaned. The daughter, in rough threadbare clothing, and her white haggard face half hidden by a coarse manta, stood leaning against the side of the door. Gaspar Ruse, with his elbows propped on his knees, and his head resting in his hands, talked to the two women in an undertone. The common misery of destitution would have made a bitter mockery of a marked insistence on social differences. Gaspar Ruse understood this in his simplicity. From his captivity amongst the royalists he could give them news of people they knew. He described their appearance, and when he related the story of the battle in which he was recaptured the two women lamented the blow to their cause, and the ruin of their secret hopes. He had no feeling either way, but he felt a great devotion for that young girl. In his desire to appear worthy of her condescension, he boasted a little of his bodily strength. He had nothing else to boast of. Because of that quality his comrades treated him with as great a deference, he explained, as though he had been a sergeant, both in camp and in battle. I could always get as many as I wanted to follow me anywhere, senorita. I ought to have been made an officer, because I can read and write. Behind him the silent old lady fetched a moaning sigh from time to time. The distracted father muttered to himself, pacing the sala, and Gaspar Ruse would raise his eyes now and then to look at the daughter of these people. He would look at her with curiosity, because she was alive, and also with that feeling of familiarity and awe with which he had contemplated in churches the inanimate and powerful statues of the saints, whose protection is invoked in dangers and difficulties. His difficulty was very great. He could not remain hiding in an orchard forever and ever. He knew also very well that, before he had gone half a day's journey in any direction, he would be picked up by one of the cavalry patrols scouring the country, and brought into one or another of the camps, where the patriot army destined for the liberation of Peru was collected. There he would in the end be recognized as Gaspar Ruse the deserter to the royalists, and no doubt shot very effectually this time. There did not seem any place in the world for the innocent Gaspar Ruse anywhere. And at this thought his simple soul surrendered itself to gloom, and resentment as black as night. They had made him a soldier forcibly. He did not mind being a soldier. And he had been a good soldier as he had been a good son, because of his docility and his strength. But now there was no use for either. They had taken him from his parents, and he could no longer be a soldier, not a good soldier at any rate. Nobody would listen to his explanations. What injustice it was! What injustice! and in a mournful murmur he would go over the story of his capture and recapture for the 20th time. Then, raising his eyes to the silent girl in the doorway, "Sigh, Senorita," he would say with a deep sigh, "injustice has made this poor breath in my body quite worthless to me, and to anybody else. And I do not care who robs me of it." One evening, as he exhaled thus the plaint of his wounded soul, she condescended to say that, if she were a man, she would consider no life worthless which held the possibility of revenge. She seemed to be speaking to herself. Her voice was low. He drank in the gentle, as if dreamy sound with a consciousness of peculiar delight of something warming his breast like a draught of generous wine. "True, Senorita," he said, raising his face up to hers slowly, "colon there is Esteban, who must be shown that I am not dead after all." The mutterings of the mad father had ceased long before. The sighing mother had withdrawn somewhere into one of the empty rooms. All was still within as well as without, in the moonlight bright as day on the wild orchard full of inky shadows. Gasparu saw the dark eyes of Don Herminia look down at him. "Ah, the sergeant," she muttered, disdainfully. "Why, he has wounded me with his sword," he protested, bewildered by the contempt that seemed to shine livid on her pale face. She crushed him with her glance. The power of her will to be understood was so strong that it kindled in him the intelligence of unexpressed things. "What else did you expect me to do?" he cried, as if suddenly driven to despair. "Have I the power to do more? Am I a general with an army at my back, miserable sinner that I am to be despised by you at last?" "Via, sinners," related the general to his guests, "though my thoughts were of love then, and therefore enchanting, the sight of that house always affected me disagreeably, especially in the moonlight, when its closed shutters and its air of lonely neglect appeared sinister. Still I went on using the bridle path by the ravine, because it was a short cut. The mad royalist howled and laughed at me every evening to his complete satisfaction. But after a time, as if wearied with my indifference, he ceased to appear in the porch. How they persuaded him to leave off I do not know. However, with Gasparuz in the house there would have been no difficulty in restraining him by force. It was now part of their policy in there to avoid anything which could provoke me. At least, so I suppose. Notwithstanding my infatuation with the brightest pair of eyes in Chile, I noticed the absence of the old man after a week or so. A few more days passed. I began to think that perhaps these royalists had gone away somewhere else. But one evening, as I was hastening towards the city, I saw again somebody in the porch. It was not the madman, it was the girl. She stood holding onto one of the wooden columns, tall and white-faced, her big eyes sunk deep with privation and sorrow. I looked hard at her, and she met my stare with a strange inquisitive look. Then, as I turned my head after riding past, she seemed to gather courage for the act, and absolutely beckoned me back. I obeyed, sinners, almost without thinking, so great was my astonishment. It was greater still when I heard what she had to say. She began by thanking me for my forbearance of her father's infirmity, so that I felt ashamed of myself. I had meant to show disdain, not forbearance. Every word must have burned her lips, but she never departed from a gentle and melancholy dignity which filled me with respect against my will. Sinners, we are no match for women. But I could hardly believe my ears when she began her tale. Providence, she concluded, seemed to have preserved the life of that wronged soldier, who now trusted to my honor as a caballero, and to my compassion for his sufferings. "Wronged man," apostrophe I observed, coldly. "Well, I think so too. And you have been harboring an enemy of your cause." He was a poor Christian crying for help at our door in the name of God, Senor, she answered, simply. I began to admire her. "Where is he now?" I asked, stiffly. But she would not answer that question. With extreme cunning, and an almost fiendish delicacy, she managed to remind me of my failure in saving the lives of the prisoners in the guardroom, without wounding my pride. She knew, of course, the whole story. Gasparuz, she said, entreated me to procure for him a safe conduct from General San Martin himself. He had an important communication to make to the Commander-in-Chief. Poor Dios, sinners, she made me swallow all that, pretending to be only the mouthpiece of that poor man. Overcome by injustice, he expected to find, she said, as much generosity in me as had been shown to him by the royalist family which had given him a refuge. Ha! It was well and nobly said to a youngster like me. I thought her great. Alas! She was only implacable. In the end I rode away very enthusiastic about the business, without demanding even to see Gasparuz, who I was confident was in the house. But on calm reflection I began to see some difficulties which I had not confidence enough in myself to encounter. It was not easy to approach a commander-in-chief with such a story. I feared failure. At last I thought it better to lay the matter before my general of division, Robles, a friend of my family, who had appointed me his aide-de-camp lately. He took it out of my hands at once without any ceremony. In the house. Of course he is in the house, apostrophe he said contemptuously. You ought to have gone sword in hand inside, and demanded his surrender, instead of chatting with a royalist girl in the porch. Those people should have been hunted out of that long ago. Who knows how many spies they have harbored right in the very midst of our camps. A safe conduct from the commander-in-chief. The audacity of the fellow. Ha, ha. Now we shall catch him tonight, and then we shall find out, without any safe conduct, what he has got to say, that is so very important. Ha, ha, ha. Apostrophe, General Robles. Peace to his soul, was a short, thick man, with round, staring eyes, fierce and jovial. Seeing my distress he added, "Come, come, Chico. I promise you his life, if he does not resist. And that is not likely. We are not going to break up a good soldier, if it can be helped. I tell you what, I am curious to see your strong man. Nothing but a general will do for the Piccolo. Well, he shall have a general to talk to. Ha! Ha! I shall go myself to the catching, and you are coming with me, of course." Apostrophe apostrophe, and it was done that same night. Early in the evening the house and the orchard were surrounded quietly. Later on the general and I left a ball we were attending in town and rode out at an easy gallop. At some little distance from the house we pulled up. A mounted orderly held our horses. A low whistle warned the men watching all along the ravine, and we walked up to the porch softly. The barricaded house in the moonlight seemed empty. The general knocked at the door. After a time a woman's voice within asked who was there. My chief nudged me hard. I gasped. "It is I, Lieutenant Santiera," apostrophe I stammered out, as if choked. "Open the door." Apostrophe, it came open slowly. The girl, holding a thin taper in her hand, seeing another man with me, began to back away before us slowly, shading the light with her hand. Her impassive white face looked ghostly. I followed behind General Robles. Her eyes were fixed on mine. I made a gesture of helplessness behind my chief's back, trying at the same time to give a reassuring expression to my face. None of us three uttered a sound. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.